Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters with your host, Betty Jo Tucker, author of Confessions of a Movie Addict, right here at www.blogtalkradio.com.
Hi, all you movie fans out there. Thanks so much for tuning in to Movie Addict Headquarters. You don't have to be a movie addict to visit here, but if you are one, it's definitely the place for you. I'm your host, Betty Jo Tucker, speaking to you during the second full week of June 2011. We have a great show planned for you today, folks, because our guest is Brendan Wayne, grandson of the legendary actor John Wayne, who has agreed to talk about his upcoming film, Cowboys and Aliens, and I can't hardly wait to hear about that, as well as how his grandfather influenced his acting career. In addition to Cowboys and Aliens, Brendan has appeared in a number of movies and TV shows, such as Couples Retreat, Fast and Furious, Angel and the Bad Man, CSI and The Closer, one of my favorite TV shows. You know, I've been looking forward to this interview for a very long time, folks. So it's my pleasure to bring Brendan on now. Thanks for agreeing to be on our show today, Brendan.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, we're so glad that you could find time to be here today. And we have lots of questions to ask you. But first, let's see if Danny Dyer and Jazz Shah are ready to help with the show. Danny, are all systems going, our chat room?
Yes, it's wonderful.
Excellent. And could you tell the listeners who aren't in the chat how they could be part of that experience?
All you have to do is to scroll up to the top of the screen that you're listening to the show on and click sign up, and it takes all of 2 seconds to sign up for a free account with Blog Talk Radio, and it'll bring you right back to our show, Movie Addict Headquarters, and you can type with us in the chat room.
Yay, and it's really easy and lots of fun. In fact, if Nikki Starr were here, she'd say the chat is where it's at. And speaking of Nikki, we're sending our best wishes for her recovery. If you're listening, Nikki, please get well soon. We all miss you. And I want to thank you, Danny, for being our producer and chat wrangler today. And thanks to the people who've signed up as well as our other listeners. Now, let's bring on Jazz to start today's interview. I know that he has, he's probably jumping at the bit to ask Brendan some questions about Cowboys and Aliens, which, by the way, is one of the summer movies I'm most eager to see. So go ahead, Jazz. You have the floor now.
It is one of the movies we're looking forward to. I was on a show earlier today in D.C. I had nothing to do with movies in general. It was a political show. And believe it or not, Cowboys and Aliens came up because somebody was discussing that as just one of the most interesting entries coming up for the summer season, and people are looking forward to it. Thanks for joining us, Brendan. This does seem like a really unusual entry, even for summer films. So to start off, you know, how did you get tempted into this? How did you first get involved in this project?
I being an actor, I try to keep up on what's coming out and who's making what, see, you know, where I can get my work. And this was brought to me by my manager, and I thought to myself, I think he must have misspoke, because I was like, Cowboys and Aliens, you mean Cowboys and Indians? He's like, no.
Oh, no.
And I was like, are we talking about some low budget fair? So what's going on here? And he was like, I assure you, it is with the royalty of Hollywood. And I was like, what does that mean? And he was like, Spielberg, Ron Howard, Orsi, Kurtzman wrote it, Favreau's directing, and then he went through the list of, you know, the icons that are in this movie, from, you know, Daniel Craig, Harrison Ford, Clancy Brown, Keith Carter. I was like, what? And I was like, yeah, let's get in on that. We can. And I'd happened to be doing a play with my wife in Hollywood And the casting director for this movie had come to it and really liked my work. And she goes, keep your look, because at the time I was very blue-collar, kind of rough looking. And she said, keep the look. I have something I want you to come in for. And sure enough, she called me in, and next thing I know, I'm doing a horseback riding callback, which I brought my own horse to, which probably helped me a little. And,
for sure.
Yeah, it was great. It was really amazing. Me getting into this movie had a lot to do with the people who I'm surrounded by, from Bobby McLaughlin, who helps me ride and helps me learn things on the horse, to Terry Leonard, who was the second unit stunt coordinator. His first movie he ever did was he did stunts on Rio Lobo with my grandfather, and he ended up dating my aunt's and uncle's nanny during that shoot. And so he took me under his wing and really protected me and made sure, that I did nothing to tarnish the image of my grandfather.
Oh,
wow.
My gosh. Well, what type of stunts did you have to perform?
Well, I can't be really specific other than I did have a fight scene in the bar, which is absolutely tremendous and fun. And the way Favreau approached this script was to make a classic Western that happened to have aliens. I think today you can't really do a Cowboys and Indians movie without in some way or another offending a culture. So John found a way to make that classic movie without being offensive. And that's where the aliens come in. So we had some challenges, in that this movie is really very little CGI, and what CGI in there is very effective as opposed to it's the CGI that makes the movie. He made a Western, and so we had to really ride horses, and I probably rode more than most just in that I was willing to do my own stunts. And thanks to Terry, I was able to do my own stunts. And so I did some stunts off the horse. I did some stunts in the bar. It was a lot of fun. I mean, when you're going, as flat out as you can on a horse, and you're jumping over cactus and other things like that, and there's a camera right next to you in a car, and horses sure don't like cars driving next to them, let alone a car with an arm off it. It was adventurous, to say the least.
Well, I heard you had a little, maybe this is just a rumor, that you had a little rivalry with your stunt with Olivia Wilder, the leading lady. Is that true, or is it just a rumor?
I don't even know if you can consider it a rivalry. I think she came in and blew the doors off everything. The fact that she was willing to do her own stunts and then make them more than they had ever intended, letting one of the leads, she went very aggressive on her stunts, and she came in at lunch, and I was about to do my stunt, which is going to be, what I understood to be a pretty simple but very adventurous stunt. And she came in and was like, I did my own stunt, and it was off the horse, and it was a live horse. It wasn't one of the fake horses that we have. And she proceeded to talk about my stunt as if, she had just done it. And I go, are you kidding me right now? And she's like, no, I did it. It was amazing. I was like, God, I'm really proud of you. And then immediately in my head, I went, my stunt has to be better. I mean, I went macho and stupid as quick as the next guy. It was quite amazing. So I ran down to set, said, after lunch, all the guys that we were having lunch with looked at me and were like, guess your stunt's not so good. And I was like, no, my stunt's going to be good. And I ran down and talked to Tommy Harper, the first unit stunt guy, and I said, Tommy, I don't care. I don't care if they make 10 sequels and if I'm, potentially going to be in them, whatever. Light me on fire, shoot me off the horse. It's got to be better than Olivia's. And he was like, I don't know if we can do that. I don't even have a stunt double for you. I was like, I don't care. Let's get this done. And my one of the stunt guys who was going to help set up the stunt came up to me and was like, hey, I got you covered. We got one for you. And he told Tommy, we're going to do the gooch. And I I don't even know what it is. And I was like, yeah, let's do that. I'm good with the gooch. Tommy's got his eyes wide looking at me like, you are the dumbest guy I know. And I'm like, I got to go ask John. He goes, and I don't even think John heard the whole sentence. He was already out thumbs up saying go for it. And, you know, the rest is on film so we can watch it. It's, actually, you can catch it in the preview. I think that's about as far as I can go with describing it. But I did it, and it was, to say the very least, adventurous.
Oh, my gosh, now we can hardly wait to see it. But I'm afraid I got so excited I interrupted Jazz. So, Jazz, sorry about that. I know you have some more questions about this movie.
Oh, no, don't apologize. Actually, I want to just wind it back a little bit because something you mentioned earlier intrigued me, the difference between old-style movies where you could offend people. But how true do you think, without giving too much away about the plot, was this an experience that kind of harkens back to the old cowboy film? So, you know, going all the way back to the black and white era, does it still carry that flavor? Or do you consider this more of like a sci-fi film?
No, this is a Western first, foremost, and will finish as it's a story of humanity overcoming a great odds and how you do it and how do you get it done. And I think the movie captures that really well. And I think, you know, people, and maybe I'm jumping the gun on a question you had, but people ask me, you know, what would your grandfather think of this? And, you know, in its synopsis, maybe he might have rolled his eyes. But in the actual implementation and the way Jonna filmed it and told the story, I think he would have been so excited to tell a story, an original story, an original way, that it, you know, all other things would have gone to the wayside, because it really is. It's got every classic Western character. You have the preacher, the drifter, the town tough guy, his derelict son, the sheriff and Keith Carradine, you know, Sam Rockwell's playing the bartender, Olivia Wilde's the mysterious woman, and, I mean, you really do have, and you have Deputy Lyle, who I play, the, you know, trying to keep the values of the town up.
Tell us a little bit more about the deputy. I mean, you know, what is your role? How would you relate it to other films? And what's your piece of the puzzle in this film?
You know, I obviously haven't grown up as John Wayne's grandson. I grew up with his movies, much like everybody else in the country and around the world. And I had a great insight because my mom was a great tutor in regard to classic storytelling. And she used to always relate these characters in my grandfather's movies to, like, mythology, to Greek mythology, and what kind of mm-hmm. character is that and such, because that's, you know, to me, the Western is our country's mythology, like it or not. It's there. I think it helps define what we want our country to be represented as. And Deputy Lyle, he reminds me a lot of Patty Fitzgerald, who played in a lot of my grandfather's movies. He's kind of fun, and at the same time, when it gets serious, he's there to be in action. He's not somebody who sits on the wayside and lets life happen. He's going to go get it, and he does the right thing when the right moment occurs. And I hearken it in a very small way to my grandfather's roles, in that he played a regular guy who did the right thing in the toughest moments quite often. He made mistakes. Almost all his characters weren't, you know, white hat, white shirts. They were real human beings that he portrayed in a bigger way. So I think Deputy Lyle can represent that type of guy. And I think, you know, his journey in this is relatable to the everyman more than anything else.
You got the connection that goes back to the old films, plus you've got a touch of the new sci-fi stuff. Do you think audiences are going to connect with this? Is that a leap they can make, or are you concerned, the mix?
I think it easily is going to draw in a bigger demographic than would if it was just a straight Western or if it was just straight sci-fi. I think you're going to get young mm-hmm. and old, and I think you're going to be able to, at least this is my hope for the movie, is that it's going to bridge a gap and allow a dialogue to happen between, you know, maybe I'm being fanciful because I grew up with movies helping a lot of dialogues in my family. A lot of conversations were started because of stories we saw on film. And I'm hoping that's what this starts. And it bridges the gap between generations and people can share their, hey, this is a movie you should see. I mean, to me, I have three little girls from 12 to 19 months. And my 3-year-old and my 12-year-old have both seen Man Who Shot Liberty Valance and both love the movie. And it's a story that I hope that, you know, draws people into other stories, you know, classic Westerns that aren't seen by the young people today because, you know, either it's not marketed or whatever. It's just not one of those movies in the market place. So I think what we see in this movie is the ability to touch on two different genres in a really – John respects both genres so much that I think – both sides will be tremendously excited by what they see. The aliens in this movie, they're not going to, you know, you're not going to see a lot of CGI. But when you do see it, it's really well done, and it's a tool to produce, you know, to propel the story as opposed to just kind of, you know, wow you. And it will wow you.
Fantastic.
Oh, I'm ready to be, I'm definitely ready to be wowed. And I wonder if Danny has any report on the chat room right now in terms of any questions or comments, or Danny, if you have questions of your own.
Oh my goodness, I get to ask questions?
Yes.
You just don't know how excited, Brendan, we are to have you. I have been talking about it all week. I've been talking about John Wayne when he played in True Grit. That is one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, it must have been good because they tried to remake it.
Oh, yeah. To me, I bought the new one, but I really like the old one a lot better.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
I wanted to ask you real quick. I know Harrison Ford must have been a fun character to work with, but Daniel Craig always plays this uptight character in all his movies. So is he really uptight, or is he more of a laid-back person in real life?
He was the most impressive. I mean, Harrison Ford, I used to sit in front of the Lorena Theater in the Valley here, and I waited, I think, 10 hours out in front of the theater so that I could make sure I got seats in to see Temple of Doom. And that was a different experience because he was more of an idol to me, whereas Daniel Craig, I can relate to him on some level. And so when I get on set and I see these two guys here and I see, you know, Harrison Ford, I'm like, there's Indiana Jones. You know, there's Han Solo. And then on the flip side, you go, there's James Bond. And to me, the Bond franchise is really important. I grew up with that as well. And Sean Connery was my favorite. And then for once, they've put in somebody who I think can carry that same torch that Sean did, which is, I was amazed at Daniel's ability to be, you know, people want to compare him to Steve McQueen, but I think he's got as much Cary Grant in him as he does Steve McQueen. And he's got a grace and a style offset. And before the cameras start rolling, that you're like, this guy knows everybody's name, and I mean everybody's name on set. And it's not a put-on. You know, he didn't, you know, study it so that I'd walk away and go, God, he's impressive. That's just who he is. And he's an incredibly gracious man, and you can approach him anyway, and everybody did, and he didn't, you know, he didn't have a problem with it, which was really amazing because, you know, this is a big franchise starting here, and he's got certain things that he's got to uphold, just like Harrison. And people want to see, much like my grandfather, and yet the pressure doesn't, he loves acting so much, and he trusts himself enough to know that he'll be there, and when he's off the set, it is what it is. His fame is where it is because people like you and me and everyone else love to go watch him. So he respects them, and he gives it back. So, yeah, he's an incredibly good man.
Well, Danny, does that answer your question? I think you can be relieved by that answer, right?
Yes, yes, that relieves me so much. I thought you might be a little stuck up, you know.
Well, you know, Brendan, we absolutely loved your grandfather. I mean, I actually have seen probably most of his films since, gosh, I hate to say the year, but it was 1939, and Stagecoach. And
oh,
I did
yeah.
see it. I did see it on the big screen. So I'm telling, you know, a little bit about my age. And my gosh, over 200 films that he made. And just is, as we said in the description for the show today, a legendary film icon. And I was just, I know that Jazz has some questions to ask you about your grandfather, so I'm going to go back to him, and then I also have some things that I would like to ask you about him. So go ahead, Jazz.
Well, that's a really nice setup. I will admit, Brendan, I'm curious. We've had some other people on who have come from, you know, just dynasty families. It was just last week we were talking to Tyrone Power's son. It's sort of a mixed bag about how some actors and actresses feel coming from a family. You've got this huge shadow, you know, when you have someone in your family of just immortal stature. How has that worked out for you? How has that affected your career, your approach to acting? You know, some people get contacts out of it, but also it can, for some, be kind of a distraction because people are just interested in your forebears. I mean, how has that been for you, you know, being, you know, from that lineage and then working in the same industry?
Oh, I think first of all, I have an incredible advantage compared to, say, my uncles, because they lived in his shadow, you know, and no matter where they went, that shadow had to carry. I'm far enough removed that he's more of an idea and more of a legend than he was, you know, acting. By the time I got around to acting, I didn't initially intend to ever be an actor. My poor mother had made it through 7 of her children without anyone jumping into the business. And she thought she'd made it with me, except for when I was about 25, she was begging me to go back to school. And I said, well, Mom, there's really only one thing I want to study. And I think that was when she went white-knuckled on the chair. And I said, acting's where I want to go. And she was like, all right, well, if you're going to do that, I'm going to tell you right now. And she laid it out. She said, hey, look, your grandfather's John Wayne, obviously. You know that. We've lived with it. But now you're going to go into a business that he dominated, and he still dominates to this day. I mean, Harris Poll put some number 3 alive or dead actors this year. So you're talking about a guy who's living, in spite of his death, constantly in people's, you know, movie repertoire. And so she said, if you're going to do this, you're going to be as good as you can be, and you're going to train as hard, and you're going to know everything you need to know, because you can't. People will expect it. And
so,
I don't know that. I got that.
Would you say that, not to interrupt you, but was your grandfather an influence on that decision, or do you think if you had been born, if your grandfather had been, you know, like a pipe and plumbing fixture salesman, did you still feel that bug? You think you still would have gone into acting anyway?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would imagine, yeah. I just on how I was growing up, you know, being the last of 8 kids, I got 5 older brothers, 2 older sisters, and I was always doing some kind of show or something like that. I don't think I ever thought to myself, acting, that's the one. Because when I went to college, I was going to be a child psychologist initially. Then they said I had to take calculus too, and I refused. But
blame you.
I flunked that one myself.
I didn't even allow it. I just said, okay, we're switching topics here, guys. Sociology sounds like a great major. I think no matter what I would have done, I was being pulled there. And I think my energy and my, you know, just the way I am kind of leads to that. And then, you know, the thing that people don't know or don't, you know, we don't promote it as Hollywood as an image, because we like the, you know, I was sitting at Schwab's and I was found, you know, drinking a cream soda. That kind of thing. But there is so much hard work in this business. And my mom shared that with me. And she said, look, your grandfather didn't walk in and have a swagger and was fully confident and was just who he was. He became who he was through experience, through learning. And no matter what you do, whether you want to be a CPA, whether you want to be a teacher, you have to do it to your best of your ability, because you do represent something bigger than yourself. And she's like, that's your family. And then
your mother has the right idea. She gave you definitely the right advice. And of course, being on the set, which I'm sure you did visit some of the sets of the films that your grandfather was making, and that probably helped a lot too to pique your interest
in
the business.
It was fun for me as a kid, because I was able to go to these sets. But you know, as a kid, I didn't think they were sets. I thought this, you know, maybe my buddy Tony's dad went and dressed up when he went to work. I don't know. I thought his dad was a cowboy until he passed away, and then you know, we'd take three different cars to get to the, you know, and this was before media really dominated. We'd take three different cars to get to the funeral, and I started to piece something together. And then I was at the Congress when they were minting a coin for him. And someone came up and asked for my autograph. I remember looking at my older brother, and I was like, Dave, he was like, sign it. Trust me, it means something to her. And that was when I was like, okay, I get it. I'm starting to piece together that granddaddy wasn't just granddaddy. He was this other guy, the Duke, to these other people. And, you know, that was really cool to find that out. And that, so, you know, I'm incredibly proud, and my life has been blessed, like, tons because of who my grandfather is. And I don't hesitate to talk about him, and I don't hesitate to celebrate him, and I do not mind riding his coattails the way I do. So family issue is my family definitely informed who I am, and acting definitely is something that runs in our blood.
Well, I don't blame you for choosing showbiz with it in your blood, so deeply in your blood. And you know, Brendan, like so many other movie addicts, I have a number of favorite John Wayne films. Heading my list is The Quiet Man, and close to that is a movie that you already mentioned, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, which isn't a regular. I mean, it's not your cookie-cutter Western. I was wondering if you have a favorite favorites of your grandpa.
Mary Shot Liberty Valance was the first one I remember watching, and that's one of them, Western-wise. The Cowboys is amazing to me for a million reasons. I just love the story, and I love that he was challenged, and you know, not to spoiler alert, he gets shot and killed by Bruce Dern. You know, you have this icon, and they were risky enough to go and kill him in a movie. And, you know, just understanding movies in general, that's a great challenge to overcome. And those kids
cared. Well, that was the first time, right? I mean, he had, in all those films, that was the first time his character had ever died, right?
He died in, and I'm asked this quite often, actually, he died in three movies, and if I could remember all, he died in The Shootist, and then he died in The Cowboys, and he died in one before that, and I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head right now. But there was one more. But the cool thing about, you talked about Stagecoach, is that I was able to work with Keith Carradine, who was my sheriff to my deputy, and Carradine's father, John, was in Stagecoach, and he was in The Shootist. He was in the first breakout movie of my grandfather's career, and he was in the last. And The Shootist, for me, will always hold probably top spot, because I know where he was at physically during that movie, and I know the characters he was playing, and it was amazing, because you know, he's playing a guy who's dying of cancer, and at the time he had just, you know, been diagnosed. You know, they had to stop shooting for 2 weeks just so he could recoup enough to finish the movie. And there was no way he wasn't going to finish that movie. So I love that movie. And Bacall and Stewart and Scatman, all those guys in that movie are just so good. that, you know, to me, the shooter just really carries his whole plate of movies with him. So it was the shooter is really beautiful, and I remember being on that set really vividly. So that'll always hold special sway over me.
I can see why, and of course the first, did you say the first one of your grandfather's films that you saw was The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance?
Yeah, that was the first one I saw. And I
that
thought, you know, people don't give him enough credit as an actor, and if they need to see what kind of actor he was, I think you go watch that movie and you realize he wasn't playing the white-hatted cowboy. He was, again, doing the right thing at the right time, and he played him so subtly and so well that it was, you know, really beautiful.
And you know, Betty Jo, he wasn't just a cowboy. And when people ask, what's your favorite John Wayne film, I always feel like I'm one of the outsiders because, you know me, I love war films. I mean, you know, that's one of my big things, Patton and everything. And honestly, one of my favorite films from Brendan's grandfather was Flying Leathernecks.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was a fantastic movie. I have it on DVD, and I've probably watched that like 40 or 50 times.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
And Sands of Iwo Jima. Yeah, Sands of Iwo Jima. I think he was nominated for an Oscar.
He did a number of war films where he was not a cowboy, and he was a lot more versatile than people give him credit. I mean, he was a great cowboy, don't get me wrong, but he was very versatile, and he did a lot of different roles. They were all tough guys.
And you can even watch McClintock and see where his funny side was, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
He could pull those funny movies off. Me personally, if I could get him in a movie now, I'd love to see him in comedy. I'd love to see what he could do with it because, you know, he's this big, strong guy. I'd love to see what they could, you know, what situations they could put him in that would really, you know, challenge him as his character.
Oh, I think that would be that's what I would like to see too. But you know, there was some comedy with The Quiet Man, I thought.
God, yeah.
And that is my favorite. And his work with Maureen O'Hara in that film was just something memorable. I think they had such great chemistry together, and everything about that movie worked. But I was wondering, and this is something we asked Tyrone Power Jr. last week, the same question, and it's always fun. I think if you could star in a remake of one of your grandfather's films, which one would it be?
That's a good question, huh? Well, if I was taking over his role,
yes.
That's a good question. I probably would lean towards The Quiet Man personally. I'm comfortable in the boxing ring, and I loved that story. I had a chance to go back to Ireland would be really great.
Wouldn't it?
But yeah, I think for sure the Quiet Man, and then a close second would be The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, although I think the character type is a little bit bigger than me, but I'd try.
Well, I would personally rather see Brendan do a remake than some of the other efforts that have either been made or been discussed. There are some films, well, you know me, Betty Jo, I mean, there's some films that just shouldn't be remade, like Casablanca and things like that. There's probably a lot of John Wayne films that we don't need to have anybody trying to remake them. But by the way, in terms of the comedy, Brendan, I think your grandfather actually did a lot of comedy that he doesn't get credit for. You and Betty Jo already mentioned True Grit was remade, and I'm not saying it was a bad remake, but the original was, in my opinion, far better. There was a lot of comedy in there. I mean, he played a kind of comical character in True Grit when he's getting, you know, woke up when he's laying on bed, but on the bed by the young girl, and he's drunk and rolling out and stuff, and he was very versatile. You probably learned a lot from him, so maybe you could share something. I know a lot of Betty Jo's fans. And this is another one that we check in on with actors all the time, are people who are either in the industry or looking to get in the industry, students who are starting out, things like that. From your experiences, do you have any advice that you would offer to people that are looking to get into either acting or maybe something behind the camera, whatever, to get into film work?
Yeah, you know, this is probably longer answer needed, but I will say this. Beyond, hey, work your butt off, is that we don't have an office to go to as actors. Our office is
right.
everywhere, whether it's at home or walking through a park. There's always opportunities to learn as an actor, whether it's watching someone's gait when they walk and gauging their age or taking off what you think you see off of them and applying it to yourself, finding ways to constantly work as an actor, because we're not paid to work as an actor often. And so there's a lot of downtime. So unless you're working your craft, you're not being an actor. You know, I definitely, you know, supported my family through restaurant industry like most actors do. And I bartended for 20 years almost. And I'll tell you right now, there's no better place to see people and to learn from them. And if you're an actor, if you're in this business, that's your number one job. I watched Sam Rockwell work, and I was really encouraged, because he works so hard to make it look so easy, and he does. You watch him work on set, and they're like, hey, can you come up with something? And it takes about a half a second, and you're like, you're a genius. And it's because he's constantly thinking about it. That doesn't mean he lived it and never got out of character, because that was not the case, but he's always pulling things and applying it to how he approaches it and how he can lay it in. So I say to anybody who's out there who wants to be an actor, who, first of all, don't listen to anybody, because they're all going to tell you it's an awful place and all that stuff. And, you know, it's tough, but it's no tougher than any other job you want to be good at. So you got to work at it, and you got to find, you know, an hour, 2 hours a day where that's what you work on. Because if you don't, you're going to get rusty and your muscle will go away.
That's very, very good advice, Brendan. And I wanted to be sure and ask you if there are any upcoming projects you'd like to mention. I was noticing on IMDb that there's a Texas Gate, or let's see, I didn't
Hell's
get the...
Hell's Gate.
Hell's Gate. Oh, well, yeah. Excuse me that I put Texas in place.
You just got everybody in Texas mad at you, Betty Jo.
I know. I didn't mean that.
No, I'll tell you what, Texas, it's in Texas, Hell's Gate is in Texas, and Possum Kingdom, so it's completely acceptable.
Well, what is that about?
That actually is, I was doing for lack of a better word, a bizarre take on a movie called Clown Hunt. And it's one of those things you do just to keep working. And okay. Instead of deers and antelopes and hunting like normal hunters do, we decided that we were going to hunt, that this was a normal thing, that people went out and hunted clowns, and there was a clown season, and there was a mime season. There were these different seasons of hunting clowns. And on this picture, I was able to meet a young guy who's about 22. And he was 22. And he came to me and he said, hey, I got the script, and I'd love you to be in it. You meet a lot of guys who say those things, and you're like, oh, okay, great. And this kid, I don't know where he got the compunction to believe that you could do it your own way, but he did. And he produced this film, this feature-length film, and I did a short with him that sold the film, and then eventually he went and made the feature, and I went and did that too. And it was just really great. He interwove history into a story of how Hell's Gate got its name. And, you know, he's got characters from John Wilkes Booth to Doc Holliday in this, and they're all interwoven through the story. And it's kind of as a matter of fact, it says in the title, I think it says Hell's Gate, an American Conspiracy. And it was really fun. And it was one of the first Westerns I got to really kind of spread my wings on. And so it was a great prep for this particular movie that I just did, Cowboys and Aliens.
Oh. So that isn't, I guess it's in post-production now.
It's actually
probably
complete, and they're just going to distribution now. So,
okay, well, watch for that.
Yeah, it's fun. It's really fun. It's got some young, great actors in it. And, I think, again, Cowboys and Aliens, it's going to open a floodgate, because I think people are going to really love it. It's going to open well. And then this next pilot season on TV, I would venture to guess that you'll probably see at least one Western get picked up and you'll be watching a Western on TV on normal, you know, ABC, NBC, Fox, CBS, you know, TV, which would be great, I think.
Well, if you come out and do any premieres out in New York, Brendan, give me a call because I would love to stop down and go see it with you.
I was just talking to somebody. I think I did an interview with somebody, and I was just talking about how I need to get back out to New York. I'm going to try to find a way to come out in the next few months because I need to get to Magnolia Bakery and get some cupcakes.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Brendan, I am so sorry to say that our time is almost up. You just, really, the time has gone by so quickly. You've been such a wonderful guest, and we want to thank you for sharing so much great information with us. We are all looking forward to seeing Cowboys and Aliens now even more than we were before we had you in the show. And we hope you'll visit us again when you have something else that you'd like to talk about. How does that sound to you?
That sounds good to me. I'll be doing a Western in Spain this fall, so we'll come back and talk about that.
Great. we'll hope to talk with you then, and we'll look forward to that. But it's time to wrap things up now with a big shout out to the folks at Blog Talk Radio and at WRSP936 for their support. Thanks again to Brendan Wayne for being with us today, as well as to Danny and Jazz for all their help, and to our chatters and other listeners for tuning in. We hope everyone enjoyed the show. I sure did. Please come back next time when our guest will be new indie filmmaker Rashad Ernesto Green. He's the writer-director of a very gritty and heart-wrenching film called Gun Hill Road. He also received a Spike Lee Fellowship and has been included in IndieWire's 10 Exciting New Voices in Black Cinema. Don't miss this one. In the meantime, don't you forget to check out our film reviews at realtalkreviews.com. That's R-E-E-L, realtalkreviews.com. That's all for now, folks. So Kenny Loggins will take us out with one of our favorite musical numbers. Get ready, everyone. Here comes Footloose.